Hi, this is Patrick Cox in the World Newsroom in Boston, and you are listening to The World in Words number 22. This week, a celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month goes a bit wrong. Also, learning Spanish so you can sing in Spanish. And buying books for your kid in all sorts of languages.
Russian, Tagalog, Vietnamese, Hindi, Urdu.
As a free man, I take pride in the words, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English?
There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Borat, as ever, you are right on the money. The World is co-produced by the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. You can hear the big show on more than 250 public radio stations. Now, I say those things every week without really explaining what the big show is and who all those producers of the big show are. So, let me set that straight. The World is a one-hour-long program. It airs Monday through Friday. It is the only daily radio show in the United States that is entirely dedicated to international news and culture. Our three co-producers, the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH, they all have slightly different roles in the show. But here's the great thing. None of them interferes editorially with what we do. And the way we put the show together is actually quite simple. Every morning at 8 o'clock, about 15 or 20 people have a meeting right here in Boston. We conference in a couple more people in London. And we have a kind of argusation about what should go in the show. We have some items already in the can. Others we need to chase down or assign to reporters or producers. We work with reporters from all over the world. Some are regulars on contract. Some we pay on a per-story basis. There are others who are BBC staffers. And we also have our own reporters here in Boston. And let me describe to you where we are here in Boston. It's a really glamorous part of town. As we, every morning at 8, are chewing over the issues of the day in our shiny new newsroom, we do so in full view of a Dunkin' Donuts, a U-Haul, a Gulf gas station, a Sprint store, and my favorite, a bargain outlet. This is the life. So that's the big show. And this podcast is my little spin-off from that. Some of the material has previously aired on the big show or on another BBC outlet, but a lot of the stuff you hear is virgin material. Thanks for the iTunes reviews, by the way. Please keep them coming. That was great. Really nice response. Also, just thank you to everybody who got the word out to your friends and colleagues about this podcast. Please keep it all coming. We start today with some bonehead news, courtesy of Monday Night Football. If you were among the 18.6 million viewers last Monday, you may have heard this after a touchdown by the Cowboys' Felix Jones.
Kickoff, and here's what it sounded like on ESPN Deportes.
El novato de Arkansas.
Y se esquiva y nadie lo va a tocar. Nadie lo va a tocar. Felix Jones!
It's our friend Alvaro Martin who does the play-by-play for all the Monday Night Football games along with former kicker Raul Alegre.
Then Tony Kornheiser said this.
I took high school Spanish, and that either means nobody is going to touch him, or could you pick up my dry cleaning in the morning? It's one of those two.
That was part of ESPN's celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month. Yep, they really kind of blew that one. Later in the game, much later, the ESPN commentary team tried to make amends.
Well, with the NFL, we celebrate football Americano, La Noche de Independencia.
On that subject, I said something before I shouldn't have said. I apologize for it. Not my first mistake, undoubtedly won't be my last, but a 100% apology.
That sounded a little awkward, you know, the way he didn't even mention what he was apologizing for. But was it insulting? I wasn't sure. I thought I should check with a Spanish speaker. So, Bill Santiago, did Tony Kornheiser's comments offend you?
No, because I didn't even know about it, to tell you the truth.
That's Bill Santiago. He's a comedian. In the evenings, he does stand-up. He doesn't watch Monday Night Football. But if he hadn't heard about Kornheiser's comments, then I think we can say they're not exactly rippling through Spanish-speaking America, causing outrage. So does that mean that we can make jokes, or I guess in this case, try to make jokes about language? Well, I guess so long as the jokes hew to that age-old rule that we English speakers are proudly dumb.
You know, I don't think it's unusual, you know, for people in the United States to be deliberately ignorant about another culture or another language. And besides, I think he was pretty on the money. He said, no lo va a tocar, no one's going to touch him. That's pretty close. His high school Spanish was actually kicking in.
That's right.
And if he really wants full redemption, maybe he could change his name from Corn Heiser to Maiz Heiser, and we'll just call it a draw.
The one thing that I found that might be slightly offensive was the joke just wasn't very funny.
Oh, it's offensive to me as a comedian, but as a Hispanic, no, I don't care.
Comedian Bill Santiago. His book, Pardon My Spanglish, ¿Por qué? Because, has just come out. And there'll be more from Bill in a future podcast. Now, if Tony Kornheiser's parents had bought him any dual language books when he was a kid, books in English and in Spanish, for example, he'd never have run into this kind of trouble. Of course, when he was a kid, I guess there weren't that many dual language books around. And there still aren't that many. But one person who's out to change that is Annika Forzani. She is the founder and president of Language Lizard, and that's a book distribution company based in Basking Ridge, New Jersey. Annika herself grew up bilingual, speaking English and Dutch. I went to visit her recently. I asked her what motivated her 3 years ago to start the business.
What really, let's say, was the genesis of Language Lizard is when I had my first child, I began to do a lot more research into bilingualism, the importance of maintaining home languages, and began to look at what kind of resources were available for these ethnic markets. Certainly seeing what's going on in this country with the increased immigration, increased number of families who speak a language other than English at home. And when I looked at what was available with the different languages, I was not that impressed.
So typically, what was available? What was it that made you unimpressed?
Well, there were some materials in Spanish. And you'd see if you would go, for example, to a local library or a local bookstore, you might find some things in French and German. And for the education market, you might find some things in Chinese, but you would find very little in, let's say, Punjabi or Farsi. At the time, even in Arabic, Yoruba, Somali, Swahili. You know, a lot of these where there's really are large populations, Polish, Russian, there are large populations in the States. And yet, if they were to go to their local library, they would find very little for them.
What did you start with? What were the first books that you published?
Well, we actually work with an overseas company who produces the books, and we bring them to the U.S. and the Canada market. So we really did start with a wide range, and we wanted to cover most of the major languages, let's say non-English languages spoken in homes throughout the U.S. So really, from the start, we had, I would say, all of the top 20 languages, with the exception of French Creole. And actually, we just added Haitian Creole. It's our newest language.
So do you market mainly to schools or to parents?
Right now, one of the biggest markets we have is teachers and educators. There has been an increased awareness among educators of the importance of maintaining heritage languages and promoting literacy at a very young age. So that's become an increasingly large focus of our market.
Okay, so say I'm a teacher and I have kids who, among my class, I have kids who speak 8 or 9 different languages. Can I order from you, say, Cinderella in English plus in 8 or 9 of those languages?
Yes. Well, almost all of our books are dual language. So let's say you had a student who was an Arabic speaker. The book would actually have Arabic and English on the page, but that same book would be available in a Hindi English edition, in a Romanian English edition, a Russian English edition. So actually what you're suggesting is what many teachers have begun to do. Obviously, the teachers don't speak all those languages, but what increasingly I'm seeing teachers do, which I think is wonderful, is they will, for example, read or use the story in the classroom in English, but they will at the same time be developing a bilingual book collection, and they will let the kids take the books home and read them in their heritage language. So they're really supporting parent involvement, which is also known to be a strong factor in a child's academic success.
So which of these languages do you find most popular?
Well, clearly one of the most popular languages is going to be Spanish. I mean, it's by far the most dominant minority language spoken in the U.S., but also increasingly we're seeing some interest in Chinese and Arabic as it's seen as a more critical language, that we need to develop those language skills more in the States, and so more schools are developing programs in Chinese and Arabic. I've seen also a great interest in languages that you might not as expect as much, the Russian, Tagalog, Vietnamese, Hindi, Urdu. In some cases, you can trace that to some increases in immigration. But also, I think we've seen a lot of growth as people have come to recognize that there's availability in those languages.
You mentioned that having your own kids was one of the reasons that you began this venture. What kind of interest have they got in this, and what kind of language skills are they able to develop?
Okay. Well, I actually have to admit that I use my kids as guinea pigs in my business, because I will read any of the age-appropriate books to them before listing it on the site and make sure that they do love it and they want to hear it over and over again. And I think that was one of the first things I recognized, that there really was a lot of potential here.
Tax write-offs.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good idea. I'll have to look into that.
Are you able to turn a profit?
Well, I'm always hesitant to get into my financials of the business, but certainly as word of mouth has spread and additional marketing and there's more demand for the books, I think we will, let's say, sustain ourselves as a long-term business.
Right. I mean, I ask that because it seems as though as recently as 10 years ago, this would have been less sustainable.
I think there's a couple of things that make the timing of this very good. First of all, if you just look at demographic shifts in the country, the percentage of families where language other than English is spoken in the home has increased considerably. We're talking close to 20% of homes now have a language other than English spoken at home, whereas I believe in 1980 it was closer to 10-11%. So we are seeing a lot shifts there. But then on top of that, it used to be in education that people were concerned that bilingualism was somewhat of a burden for a child, and that it might lead to certain language delays and other kind of delays. And so many times educators were actually telling parents, you know, don't use your native language at home because you're going to confuse the child. What we're seeing now is more teachers recognize that what's more important is developing the literacy at a young age. And it's actually less important what language they're using at home. And in fact, the best practice says for non-English speakers is use the language that you're more comfortable in with the child. So I think those are certain shifts that have happened in understanding that have led to a lot of the interest in these kind of materials.
Annika Forzani of Language Lizard. By the way, I edited out one of the best bits of that interview, saved it for later. You know, winter's coming. I start behaving like a squirrel. It'll pop up in a story I do on parents who try to raise their kids bilingually. Now, if you have any thoughts on this, or maybe you grew up speaking two languages, let me know. Message me on the Facebook group The World in Words, or email me. That address is language@pri.org. You know, sometimes I wonder whether Americans and Brits will ever really embrace foreign language learning. I despair of this sometimes, to be honest, especially with English becoming a global language. But then along comes a story about language learning that's, well, inspiring. I hand the microphone over to The World's Lisa Mullins.
Musician Dan Zanes once fronted a 1980s rock group called the Del Fuegos. The band had a Spanish name, but the songs were in English, and Zanes barely spoke a word of Spanish. Well, fast forward a couple of decades. Now Dan Zanes is out with a new CD, and he's singing in Spanish. It's a family album called Dan Zanes and Friends, Nueva York. Here's a quick sample. Dan Zanes, is it really true that you did not speak Spanish before you recorded this album?
It started when I began taking lessons up at a place called El Taller on 103rd and Broadway here in New York. And my Spanish teacher at that time, Bernardo Palumbo, and was really the person who said, you know, when I mentioned this idea that had been bouncing around in my mind, he said, you can do it and I'll help you. And he did.
What was the idea? I mean, what was the impetus?
3 years ago, I went out to Iowa, bringing music to the people, as it were, and because of meatpacking jobs, there were a number of small towns that had become
in some cases 30% Mexican and a little bit Mexican-American, but because of these meatpacking jobs. And so that's going from almost 0 to 30%. It's an incredible shift in the makeup of these communities. And I saw the ways in which the towns dealt with it. And it went from terror and suspicion and fear to celebration. Basically, I saw the way the country was changing and that there was so much of a Latino influence in so many communities, and some of it was very, very new. And I just really didn't want to miss out on the party.
Yeah, you say in the album, we're having a 21st century party celebrating some of the amazing culture that's come here from various parts of Latin America. How did you decide which parts you were going to focus on? I mean, how did you see this album gel?
As they say, let the music do the talking. And it was really just which songs grabbed me. And what I started gravitating towards mostly was the music of Puerto Rico, music of Colombia, and music of the Atlantic coast of Mexico down by Veracruz, the Son Jarocho music. And then from there, I began doing my own research, meeting other people, and it grew. But, you know, that's what my life is like these days, that there are so many people all across South America in my life that are so generous, and the spirit of generosity is really what pervades here. Cuando yo voy a Borinquen,
está muy lejos,
no puedo ir caminando. Cuando yo voy a Borinquen, no puedo ir caminando.
Some of the songs that you say struck you, it's funny because they struck me very much, and I guess it's kind of maybe it's a universal thing, maybe not, but there are a few old folk tunes in particular. One that I really liked a lot was this tune from Nicaragua, Mi Luna.
Mi Luna ha visto tanto. Yeah, I love that song. You know, for me, because I was learning Spanish along the way, it was... A lot of it was the melody and the rhythm that got me at first. With music in general, language is not, to know the language is not important, but I always hope that people along the way, I'm sure we all say to ourselves, you know, I gotta learn Spanish. And many of us do, of course, at this point, but for those that are still contemplating, I feel like I'm a good example because I'm in my 40s and it's not that easy, but the payoff is huge. Cuando el hombre canta un amor que muere.
Who else are we hearing here?
Sonia de los Santos is from Monterrey in Mexico, state of Nuevo León, and she is the guitar player in our group. She did a lot to help me with the nuances of singing in Spanish.
Que quiere darme luna llena. Escucha la pena cuando no me canta el amor que espera.
How long have you been speaking Spanish now?
It's been a couple years.
A couple years.
Two years.
So what was the maybe phrase that was hardest for you to get your mouth around in one of these songs?
I think the where I felt most triumphant was my verse in Compadre Pedro Juan from the Dominican Republic. It's a merengue, and because of the way that Dominicans and Puerto Ricans also, to an extent, speak Spanish, a lot of the consonants are dropped, and so it's a pretty quick tune, so it's a lot of words jammed in there, and I was really leaping around the room in triumph when I finally got it. It took a long time.
Compadre Pedro Juan, padre jaleo. Compadre Pedro Juan, que está sabroso. Aquella niña de los ojos negros que tiene el cuerpo flexible para bailar en paliza.
You sounded very convincing there, Dad.
I never felt like I needed to sound Dominican, and you hear the Dominican singer right after me, but I felt like I needed to at least sound like I was respectful.
Let me just finish up here by asking you, is there, for you, Dan, is there one song that you can take us out on here that galvanizes what the album means to you?
I think a good song would be Colas. It's a son jarocho from Veracruz, Mexico. There's a tuba, there's an electric guitar, so it really sounds like, and we do it with our friends the Villalobos brothers, so it sounds like two worlds collide. It's neither rock and roll nor son jarocho, but the starting point is this incredible party song called Colas. So that to me is what the record's all about. We find this musical middle ground, and I think this is the best example, and you can dance to it.
Cuando yo tenía dinero me decían Don Nicolás, ahora que no lo tengo me dicen Culas nomás. Cuando yo tenía dinero me decían Don Nicolás, ahora que ya lo tengo me dicen Culas nomás. Ay, Colas, Colas, Colas y Nicolás, lo mucho que te quiero y el mal pago que me das. Ay, si quieres, si puedes, si no ya lo verás. Ay, qué bonito baila la mujer de Nicolás.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Bonito a caballo que tiene Nicolás. Camina para adelante, camina para atrás. Bonito a caballo que tiene Nicolás. Camina para adelante, camina para atrás.
Colas, Colas, Colas y Nicolás. Lo mucho que te quiero y el mal pago que me das. Si quieres, si puedes, si no ya lo verás. Ay, qué bonito baila la mujer de Nicolás.